Hi, this is Otto Collins.
And this is Susie Collins. And we want to welcome you to our recording on relationships and money.
In the recording you're about to hear, we're being interviewed by Paul Tebow about some very important issues many of us are faced with about one of the most difficult and challenging areas in our relationships, money.
In this recording, you're going to hear us talk about the right way and the wrong way to deal with your money issues in relationships. And you'll discover what to do when you have different views about money than your partner. You'll learn three magic phrases you can say to reconnect and build trust with your partner when money challenges are present for you in your relationship and so much more.
Just a quick note about this recording. This recording was part of an interview and teleseminar series on dealing with the important issues around love, relationships, and money. And this interview that Paul Tebow did with us in that series. The information we share is fantastic and has the power to really impact the quality of your relationship and how you and your partner deal with this sensitive issue of money. The recording, however, was recorded over a telephone line and is less than studio quality.
Even though this recording is not studio quality, we know you're going to get a lot out of it. And now, here's Paul Tebow.
What we're going to be speaking to you today about is how to handle sensitive money issues in relationship. The things that really could make or break a relationship if not handled well. So I just wanted to get started just asking you, right off the top, real sensitive question that many people deal with. When one partner comes into a relationship and they have more financial resources or more money than the other, what are the most important things to do to keep the connection strong and alive and growing in the relationship?
Well, we've lived this, so we can tell you right off the bat that this is our story. And what we've done is just learn how to stay open to each other and how to stop the games of superiority and inferiority when they come up, and just to be open and focus on what we want instead of what maybe appears to be happening.
Also, when one partner comes into the relationship with more money than the other, one of the things that you have to do in your relationship is you have to understand one thing, and that's that your partner is your friend, your partner is not the enemy. Your partner is there to support you, your partner is there to help you in your life path, and so the goal or the intention that we believe is that you need to decide together, okay, what, how are we moving forward financially, and not just financially, but in all ways? And even if one person comes to the relationship with more money than the other, then you need to see how, the roles that both people are going to play. And, just a very simple practical example of this is determine who's going to pay what household monthly bills each month. Determine, who's going to take care of, let's say, if there's a financial emergency, say a water pipe burst outside, who's going to take care of that financially? And you got to work these kind of things out in advance. Otherwise, it's certainly the wrong time to do it when you're right in the middle of one of these big issues, one of these big, financial upsets or crises. That's certainly the wrong time to do it. So working out these things in advance is a huge plus.
So if I heard you correctly, it sounds like posturing. You want to avoid posturing in terms of being superior and being, and taking on the identity of inferior because you might have less money. And also assigning roles ahead of time with the money helps you stay connected and not feel so separate in terms of your power in the relationship.
Even the best people who are very much in love, like we are, we have felt like we were soulmates. We're absolutely in love. But this game, I'll call it, of superiority and inferiority, just kind of weasels its way in sometimes in this kind of situation. And what you have to do is just back out of it. You have to see what you're doing and acknowledge it and back out of it and say, no, I'm not going to play that game anymore.
And something that might be very helpful to the people that are listening is to understand one of the places that we come from, not just in our relationship coaching work and in the books that we write and the seminars we teach and so forth, but also we live this and we try to do this in our own personal life. And there's a very important distinction I think that's important for people to understand. And the simplicity may throw people off for just a second, but if you really go deep with this, it will change your relationships and it'll change your life. And it's this, that every single thing we do in our relationships and our life is either moving us closer to or further from what it is that we want. So if you're determining that, like in Susie and my case, in our relationship, also what we believe that most people want, what we all really want is we want connection. We want love. We want passion. Whatever connection means to you, that's what you want. And so you have to determine, okay, how are you going to do this? How are you going to be able to create that? And if you're creating a situation where you're superior or you're allowing your self-esteem issues perhaps or whatever issue to create, you know, you being an inferior in the relationship, that's not going to be something that's going to create the connection, I think, that's going to help you create what it is that you really want. We've also heard some relationship teachers refer to this as a one-up, one-down position, where one person is superior, the other person's inferior. So however you want to look at it, it's how are we going to create our life and our relationship so that we can create this close, connected relationship? And that's the goal and that's the ideal.
So it sounds like being conscious and deliberate in what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're feeling to move you closer to what you want, and ultimately that'll bring more fulfillment to your relationship.
And in our particular case, we have gone even further out on a limb with our financial issues. Is, you know, we're in business together, and that presents some unique challenges as well, because, you know, not only are we intimate partners, but we have our personal finance, but we've got, you know, the business, the relationship coaching business, and so that presents a whole different set of challenges around who's going to be responsible for what. So yes, being totally conscious, that's exactly what you have to do, and assigning roles and determining who's going to do what and making those roles and those jobs or assignments, making those okay.
Well, that's certainly very helpful, and I want to let the people listening today know that, you know, one thing you want to do is pay close attention throughout this interview, because we're going to be giving the participants an actual place where they can go to gain access to more of what Otto and Susie know about relationships and how they can improve them. So toward the end of the call, we're going to give you a destination to go where you can actually access more of the resources Otto and Susie offer. So if you would, sit up, take notes, and pay attention, because we're going to have some really good content here for you to move forward. So moving on to another subject involving kids. What about when money is spent on kids? How do couples reconcile if there are different views on how much is too much?
Well, here again, Paul, I think that so much is done unconsciously that the clearer you are with each other and the clearer your motivations, the better. I know in our situation, Otto has a son in high school. And
From a previous relationship.
And what we do is he'll tell me, you know, what he's planning to spend and how he's planning to do it. And I might ask a question of him to maybe bring in consciousness without it being a blame statement. And he will decide then how he wants to go about doing what he's doing. And all the while, we have our main goals that, you know, he and I really stick to as far as money and how we're going to do it. So we're very clear. And when we're not clear, we get in trouble. And this is just one of those ways that a lot of people do get in trouble when they're not really clear about their motivations. Am I trying to buy love by spending way too much on my child? So it really calls for becoming conscious of what are my intentions here, and really going deep with that. And the other person not being blaming, but actually having the agreement ahead of time that, well, I can ask some questions here without being blameful.
So what I heard was, if you're going to communicate about something that might be bothering you about how one or the other is spending on children, you want to communicate in a way that raises awareness and maybe just recognizes a pattern without saying it's right or wrong. It's what I've noticed as a pattern. Or maybe it's not a full-blown habit, but it's something that you want to talk more about. I also heard that clarity is important. Clarity in understanding, what am I really motivated by here? And, what are our goals to begin with? What did we say we were committed to? Is that pretty accurate?
Sure. And, when there's been, a second marriage and you have one of the people have children from another marriage, or even your own children, and you have different views on how to spend money on the kids, then it's just you've got to be very clear about what are my intentions here about buying him or her a car or whatever.
Or the latest video game system or anything.
Guitar Hero.
Yeah. At the time of this recording, there's a video game that's Guitar Hero that's the hottest thing for, high school age folks or a lot of folks.
Sure.
And so what is it that you're trying to achieve and accomplish in spending, money on the kids? And, going back to the theme that we sort of started this with, what we all really want is connection. And some people believe that you can buy connection with your kids by buying them things. And I don't think that it's the money that you can that is anything that you can buy connection with your children. It's the time that you spend with the kids, and it's the quality of time, and it's the quality of that connection. And, the things that we buy in our life, those are just simply things to enhance and enrich the quality of our lives.
And I've heard it expressed that it's the memories that you create with your children that make the biggest difference.
Absolutely.
That's great. And you touched briefly on blended families and children from, previous relationships or marriages. And is there anything unique between a relationship that involves a blended family and a relationship that has kids in just the one relationship?
One of the things that you have to be careful about in blended families is that, once again, you're talking about, in this conversation, we're talking about money, and there's a lot of other issues that play into this as well. But if you're coming together and you're a blended family, then you're talking about essentially an extension of a partnership. And so the true definition of a partnership, at least from my perspective, is it's an agreement between two equals to come together. And that would also mean that the children of the two people that are coming together to form this blended family, then those children are also equals. Okay? And so you do have some inner dynamics and some inner workings that are always going to be present, but you got to be clear about, okay, well, if Johnny needs new glasses, that's one thing, but you're not going to buy Johnny the latest video game, whatever, if you're not going to do that for the other. So, once again, we've stressed this throughout this entire call so far, is the idea of consciousness and really being aware of not just what you're doing, but why you're doing it. And so there's a difference between necessities, things that are critically important to, just keeping the family unit running from a financial and a perspective of, what do you need to do? And then there's other things that the dynamics really start playing out in, are just how you spend, I'll call it extra money, on the kids.
In working with blended families, we found that they don't talk about these things ahead of time, that they often happen unconsciously and from habit. And if there's anything that we would, any advice we would give to blended families or even families that are not blended, to be conscious, to talk about these things and agree ahead of time.
Yeah, you know, the word that was rolling around in my mind as you described the dynamic of a blended family spending money, or even if it's just, you know, where emotional attention goes, I was thinking of the word favoritism. And in my experience with just blended families that I know through friends and family, you know, I've noticed sometimes that, you know, one parent, you know, who might not be the blood parent, you know, treats a child slightly differently than the blood parent, and it sets up a strange dynamic that I imagine people need to be careful about.
Right, and that just falls into the consciousness category. And being open to maybe looking at what you're doing.
Again, raising that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. Well, here's an interesting topic. You've both shared with me that you don't buy birthday gifts or Christmas gifts for each other. And for a lot of
couples, how dare we not do that?
Well, for a lot of couples, you know, those are special occasions.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you shower the other with gifts and you know, on birthdays and holidays? What's behind that?
Well, here's an interesting twist, and you know, something that we're certainly not afraid to share is that you know, in some respects, we're certainly blessed, but we believe that any couple can do at least a part of what it is that we do as a part of our regular day. We devote 1 hour a day to what we'll call connecting. And that's before our feet ever hit the ground to start our day, that we simply are in our bedroom, we're talking, we're connecting. That could include making love. More often than not, it does. But not always, but we'll spend that hour a day connecting and truly being with each other. And that's our commitment to each other. Throughout the day, we're constantly, you know, talking to each other, because we have the luxury of working together. You know, also creates some interesting dynamics. But what we do is, there's nothing in our life that's more important and more precious to us than our gift of connection that we have between ourselves in our relationship. And what we do is we continue to do things that are enhancing and bringing more life and more passion to our relationship. And, you know, a lot of people will wait to, you know, buy something that they want, you know, whether it's personally or for the house or anything like that. And we don't, because life is too short. And so if we want something, if something makes sense, we do it. We don't wait. But as far as showering each other with, you know, a special occasion, our take on it is that's something we want to be doing all the time.
Appreciating each other every day.
Yeah, and really that fills your emotional bank account.
It sure does.
Yeah.
You know, every day we tell each other how much we appreciate each other. And we might do little things for each other. And we'll have private celebrations of special music. And these are not necessarily tied to birthday or holidays. But they may be.
You know, for example, at the holidays and at birthdays, what we will do, though, is that we'll create maybe, you know, we'll go to a really nice dinner, or we'll have the family come in for, you know, a celebration, or we'll go be with the family or something like that. So we're not suggesting that we don't celebrate birthdays and holidays at all. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen is that a lot of people, the challenge that they have in their relationships are that, you know, let's take birthday and say another holiday that people typically spend a lot of money for, Christmas, in this country here in the U.S., is that people will make those 2 days stand out. And, of course, if you watch TV,
anniversaries
too, is you'll watch the TV, and, of course, that's the day that the man is supposed to buy the diamond ring for the wife. And, you know, there's all these, you know, shoulds that are happening. And so what we believe is that if you build each other up all 365 days of the year, that you're not going to feel like something is missing. You're not going to feel like there's this big gaping hole that has to be repaired on those other 3 days.
Yeah.
And if you're constantly, you use the term, putting things into the bank account of the relationship. If you're constantly doing that, then you don't have to overdo it at the holidays.
But, you know, you really have to have an agreement between the two of you, because there can be expectations. I know that one woman that we knew was expecting her husband to send flowers to the office so she could be publicly honored, and instead he sent them to the house, and she didn't like that. So you really have to be honest about what it is you want.
Yeah, and we have this agreement, and this agreement works for us, but that doesn't mean that this agreement is going to work for everyone else.
No, I fully understand. I mean, it's the effort to appreciate and give attention to each other, you know, consistently, without feeling like you need to fill up with the endless desire to have stuff to meet your emotional needs.
Absolutely, and, you know, just another quick example, just to take this one step further about, you know, the connection and what we do or don't do. A lot of people are surprised to learn that we don't wear wedding bands. And even though we're incredibly close, incredibly connected, and we have a very simple take on that, is Susie was married to someone else for 30 years before we got together. I was married to someone else for 15 years, and we didn't get together until after those relationships ended. But, you know, we both wore wedding bands in those relationships, and those didn't help us keep those relationships together because of changes and dynamics that happened, and, you know, those relationships sort of ran out of gas. And so we believe that if you are truly connected and you are truly together, that people will know, and that you won't need that, I'll call it a crutch, to tell people, hey, we're married. Because with Susie and I, if you don't know we're together, then you're just blind.
True.
Well, and oh, Paul, I was just going to say, we do a lot of coaching with people about jealousy, and one of the biggest things is attention. That, the people in the relationship don't feel, on both sides, don't feel like they get enough attention. And that's part of what we're doing here, is, you know, by the celebration every day.
And I want to bring this back to money, is because, you know, this is a conversation about, you know, money dynamics and relationships, is that's why people typically will sort of go overboard in buying and lavishing the other with gifts and so forth, is that they don't do the kind of things that we're talking about that Susie and I do and that we coach people to do in their relationships, is that they simply don't do these kind of things on a regular basis. And then a birthday or an anniversary or a holiday comes up and they go, oh, I better do something quick.
Mm.
Okay, so that's
addressing the root of the problem.
That's
yes,
right.
Absolutely.
That's
and so
right.
That's why we wanted to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know what? I think it's probably a good time, because we've talked a lot about, you know, different sensitive situations, and there are many others to handle to create more intimacy. Moving on to another financial matter, another money conflict, what if one partner wants to handle the finances, the other partner wants to be involved? Which approach is better than the other, or is one approach better than the other?
Well, I don't think one is better than the other. I think both people need to have an overall view of, you know, the financial situation, so that either person is not in the dark. But, you know, you have to take into consideration personal talents that one person has, and the other person may not have that talent.
You don't want me running the, you know, managing the checkbook is what she's really trying to say.
But, you know.
Okay, so taking into consideration that, you know, somebody in the relationship might be more efficient, more skilled in the matters of money.
Sure. You take that into consideration.
And it's not just skilled as far as the managing of money, but it also parts of one or the other's partner's personality comes into play. It's not that I can't, you know, balance a checkbook, but I always put that low on the priority list, and so, you know, that's something that Susie has the diligence to persevere through, and me, you know, just my personality is I'm out there, you know, looking for, you know, how can we grow our business and how can we reach more people and you know, how can we, you know, what new movies coming out that Susie and I can go to or you know, anything like that. And so it's just, it also is personality traits as well.
Sounds like assigning those roles as well, too.
Yes.
That's right. And, you know, it comes back to not making the other person wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many couples we see, and you probably see them too, where they do make each other wrong in all kinds of different ways. And it comes back to honoring Otto's gifts, honoring my gifts, and, okay, how am I going to contribute to this partnership? And what's our agreement about our partnership?
And nothing shuts down communication faster than making someone wrong.
Oh, yeah, and people do it all the time.
That's true. So avoiding that, definitely, okay. Here's a question that I've been wanting to ask you, because Otto and I have had a previous conversation about this. What are the potential effects on a committed relationship or a marriage if one in the couple wants to keep separate finances, or they've made a decision to keep separate finances?
If you're in a relationship with someone and you want to keep separate finances, that's okay. Once again, going back to if that's your agreement, if that's what works for you. Something we haven't talked about so far in this conversation yet, Paul, is the idea of the importance of trust. Okay? For any couple to really have their finances and their financial life work, trust is so critical and so important that you have to understand, you know, where the other person's coming from, first of all. And there's also other dynamics that play into it, too, of you know, if one person, you know, for example, has had financial challenges in the past, and so they're trying to be more mindful, and the other person wants to spend every dime they have, and they've created agreements around how they're going to spend their money, and one person continues to essentially not honor those agreements, then you've got some real challenges. And so that's when trust issues come up is, you know, trust issues certainly happen around money and they happen around everything else. But when trust issues come up is when either agreements that are conscious have been broken or when there are unspoken agreements that are broken. And when you have unspoken agreements, you have to talk about these things. And you have to, I guess the first step is to become aware of what we're calling an unspoken agreement. But trust is so huge when you're talking about, you know, couples having separate finances. And once again, it also, like in our case, in our relationship, we have, Susie has her finances, I have mine, once again, because we came into the relationship with different, you know, separate finances. And then we also have finances between the two of us that are sort of joint finances. And, you know, whatever dynamic works for you, that's okay. But once again, going back to being totally conscious about, okay, why are we creating it this way? Okay, one of the reasons why we created separate finances, just in, you know, just for the sake of total openness and authenticity, was Susie said to me very early in our relationship is that I don't ever want to pay your child support. And so that was one of the reasons that we kept separate finances. Not the only reason, but that was one of the reasons. And so that's certainly, you know, a request that I can honor and something that just keeps that separate.
And so not only for that reason, but we also had other things that we created our separate finances around. We divided up, okay, I was going to pay these expenses, Susie was going to pay these, and once again, then we had other things that were joint financial decisions and financial matters. So there's no right, there's no wrong, and that's where people get into problems and challenges, is making one way right or one way wrong. And so that's I guess one of the messages we're offering to people is whatever works for you, but just be sure that both of you are really clear that this is what you want and this is what works for you.
And many times, if you have separate finances or one person suggests that, there are all kinds of stories that are created in the other person's mind about what this means. And you have to get clear, what does this mean? You know, what is the motivation behind this? What's the intention? And really, truly listen to each other. I know that, the people we've coached, whether it's separate or joint finances, there can be all kinds of damaging agendas, resentments come up over finances. So having separate finances is just another way to have an agreement about how you're going to live your life. And, you know, that may change for us a little bit later down the road after his son graduates and he doesn't have child support anymore. It might change. So you keep it all fluid and all loving.
It's true, and I understand, just in the way that you just described your own personal situation, that there could be, perfectly good reasons to have separate finances. And as Otto said, as long as trust is the core of the relationship, and as you said, Susie, and I actually wrote in the margin, while you were talking, intent was the word that I was thinking about. As long as the intention is for the good of the relationship, then there's no problem. You know, when there's hiding, the intent is, I want to keep my finances separate because I'm hiding something from you. Mm-hmm. Now you've broken the trust.
Right, and the two people probably shouldn't be together if that's the case.
Right.
You know, if there's no partnership.
See how it really doesn't matter a whole lot as long as you keep trust at the core of the relationship.
Right. And know that it can change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not be stuck and not make up stories. I think couples get in trouble so much when they make up stories in their head about what something means.
Because there are couples that we have coached that make up stories that if my partner's in charge of the finances, then this means that, when it may not necessarily mean that, but they've made up this story about what it does mean. Or that they're bringing some painful event from their past into, okay, well, I have to be in control of the finances for this reason because I'm not going to let this happen to me again. Maybe something that happened in a previous relationship or earlier in their life. And so people create these stories in their head, and they drag those stories along with them forever until they really examine whether that story is real and true and whether that story serves them. Because we all constantly are creating stories. That's the way our brain works. It works in making a story up about everything. That's how we interpret things. And the question is the story you're making up, is that, once again, moving you closer to what it is you want or further from?
It's true. Stories are so common in life. And the sad part is that many people make disempowering meanings out of neutral circumstances. And if you can take that and actually come up with one more empowering meaning than you do disempowering, you actually have a chance to move toward what you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Well, one question I had was, do you think when couples actually are fighting over money that's the real problem? Or is there something more serious at the heart of the matter?
Money's usually the top layer. As we've seen in ourselves and also other people, it's absolutely I'm not good enough, I'm not deserving enough. It's the unconscious idea of I'm getting my worth from doing something, you know, like from being better at finances than you. I can get your attention by running up credit card debt. But it all boils down to there's some lack there. There's some feeling of I'm just not good enough here. And we found that getting to that place is probably the best thing that you can do. Skipping over, okay, we know we have this money issue, but it's so much deeper. And looking at that, what am I really feeling here? And being willing to open up and say, okay, here's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like I'm not good enough at this, or I'm not good enough in my life. So there's always some fear underneath it. And sometimes it takes us, you know, a few hours, even a couple of days, to get to the bottom of what it is that's underneath this big thing that's out in front of us. And we have the opinion that we come together as a couple to heal, to learn, to grow, to be in joy. And part of that growing is being faced with these issues, you know, and money issues are part of that. So, you know, we try to be easier about it, you know, knowing that, okay, all right, these things are going to come up. I know I didn't have money issues with my first husband. We just cruised along, you know. We had other issues. And there was healing there from that. And now it's like, okay, I'm going to a new school with Otto. You know, we're going to money school, but it's not really about money. Money's just the trigger.
Right. It's a trigger to a deeper pain. And
it sure is. And to healing that.
Yeah.
And when you look at, okay, all right, this is coming up, so I can see what I do, you know, to bring myself away from love, to bring myself away from connection with myself, my creator, my mate, whatever. And, okay, I see what I do. So how can I heal this?
Just the vehicle, you know, that is, you know, causing you the pain, you know, but it's really the need that you need to get at and heal, you know, so that, you know, that vehicle resolves, you know, the issues are resolved.
Sure. And sometimes you need help getting there, you know, from a coach, from a therapist. Sometimes, you know, it's bigger than what you can handle yourself. But it's that looking at, okay, how am I separating myself?
Let's talk about a couple that may have gone down, you know, a drastically bad road financially, and they've destroyed their financial lives. How can they manage to stay connected and committed to the relationship so they don't destroy the relationship in the process?
First of all, a couple that's done that, I would suspect that if they've done that, then they probably, you know, unless it was a financial disaster that was beyond their control, you know, let's say that, you know, they've lost, you know, they both lost their jobs, or the primary financial money maker in their relationship lost a job, or, you know, they had a business go under, or some big huge dynamic like that. Unless it was something like that, then it probably was a function of not being conscious and present to what was really going on in the relationship. And so, you know, if there's a true relationship, you know, emergency, the best thing that we can suggest, perhaps is a simple phrase: this is important to me because. When you start talking about money and you start talking about finances, letting the other person know where you're coming from, okay? And so what you've got to do is, like anything else, is you've got to take a true, honest assessment of where you are. Okay, because until you know where you are, you cannot go from where you are to where you want to be. And that's one of the places that people get stuck, is they aren't really willing to take a good hard look at the reality of their present circumstances. Okay, so
that's where the blame comes in. That's where the judgment and telling their partner, well, you did this and you did that, and going back to, okay, so what's the goal? What's the intention? Okay, the intention is to heal whatever money challenge is present for the couple right then and there, and also to keep the relationship close and connected. And you can't do that if you're not on the same team. And so, you know, we've seen this in sports over and over and over again where, you know, star athletes cannot win a championship of one kind or another because they create so many problems and challenges with the people that they're on the sports team with. And so it's their very essence, their core, that destroys the relationships and destroys the trust and destroys all those things that otherwise could be the foundation of something truly outstanding. Well, that's what we do in our relationships, is that we start looking at the other person as the enemy. So going back to, okay, where are we now and where do we want to go? Okay, and so one of the keys to this is to looking at your partner and your mate as your beloved. And once you look at someone and you say, you know, it was one of the biggest discoveries of dynamics that has been helpful to Susie and I was very early in our relationship. Susie had the insight and Susie had the aha that, you know, she was, you know, walking with a friend one day and she had the insight that she was treating me at that particular moment different than she was treating her friend or other friends. And so you have to treat your mate, your partner, your spouse as you would your very best friend. And so how would you do that? Okay, when you take a look at your friends, you know, you're constantly, you know, if you upset them, if you hurt their feelings, if you, you know, whatever's going on, then you're going to do whatever you can to heal that. And so you want to truly take a look at, okay, if this financial crisis is going on, where are you now, and then how can you stay connected through it all?
And examine your commitments. Are you committed to being right above all else rather than the relationship? You have to look at, okay, what am I really committed to? Am I committed to separating from my partner here in this matter? Or am I committed to honestly giving up the need to be right and doing what's best for our relationship? So you really have to
doing love over the circumstance.
Exactly. And that doesn't mean being stupid about finances at all.
No.
But it really means examining, am I just holding on to being right just so I can be superior? Or so I can be, you know, the one-upmanship, which a lot of people do?
Well, I think that's been insightful. Certainly, the phrase "this is important to me because," you know, helps someone who truly cares about you, you know, focus on, well, I might need to listen here, and I might need to, you know, see where we can grow, and you know, where we are now, where do we want to go, and giving up the need to be right is so important in all communication. But certainly, if you're facing the dissolving of your financial lives.
And I think one thing, Paul, that's important is to have the agreement that you can ask for the other person to just listen and not give their opinion or whatever while you're talking. So Otto and I will just face one another or sit and look at one another and talk. And one person will talk and the other person will just listen so that you do feel free to say what's important to you and why. What's your intention in whatever it is that you were doing? You know, what were you thinking without being criticized?
Without being judged, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, we're getting very close to the end of our time here, so I want to make sure I have an opportunity to summarize some of the things that we talked about. talked about issues related to, you know, differences in finances coming in as far as the amount of resources. And you said that, you know, you want to assign roles. You want to stay open. You don't want to play games of superiority and inferiority. When we spoke about issues about spending money on kids, I think it was examining your motivations and understanding the goals that you had up front so that everyone's consciously doing what they said they were going to do and you have clarity. You also said that with blending blended families, just consider all parties to the blended family equals and stay in tune with your intentions of connecting with the whole the family as a whole and not favoring, I actually talked about not favoring one over the other. And then you raised some important insights related to trying to buy love effectively by showering people with gifts at special occasions. And it really isn't about that, if I heard you correctly. You said it's really about 365 days a year giving people giving your partner the intention, the attention and the appreciation that you both deserve. And so that's a couple of the other things. With respect to handling finances, I think what I heard was that it doesn't necessarily matter whether the finances are separate or together, as long as the intent is built on trust and that you clarify any unspoken agreements that you may be operating under. And then we sort of finished things up with, you know, talking about how to stay connected when things are really, really going badly as far as momentum and finances. That's really, you know, figuring out, you know, where you are now, where you want to go, and giving up your need to be right about the situation and making sure you listen when someone's speaking. Does that pretty much summarize what we talked about?
It does. That's a really good summarization. It's really good.
Very good. So, Susie and Otto, I want to thank you so much for your participation in this series of teleseminars. It's added great content, and I'm sure the listeners have gotten a lot out of it. Thank you so much.
This recording is copyrighted by Susie and Otto Collins and Conscious Heart Publishing. Reproduction or duplication of this recording of any kind is strictly prohibited. For more information about us, relationship coaches Susie and Otto Collins, or to sign up to get our free weekly Passionate Heart, Love, and Relationship newsletter, just visit our interactive website at www.passionateheart.com. That's passionateheart.com, all one word. If you'd like to contact us about coaching, speaking engagements, or for any other reason, just call our office at area code 614-459-8121. That's area code 614-459-8121. Thanks very much for listening. This is the end of this recording.